It's not just about watching the game. It's about betting on it. I'm Mike Valeni, and on Cash the Ticket, Jim Costa and I break down every college football and NFL matchup like it's the last game we're ever going to watch, from the best bets to the sneaky underdogs. And of course, as my co-host likes to say, the value. And the one thing we're not going to do is pretend we're professionals. We have fun with it. It's an entertainment product, and it makes watching games a hell of a lot of fun. So Cash the Ticket, follow it in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Recovery from addiction can take many forms, and quite often, it's a team effort. For those in recovery, having support often leads to a better outcome. And for those supporting people in recovery, they celebrate every milestone. Here's to family, friends, loved ones, healthcare providers, and community groups who are essential to helping people find their path to recovery. If you or someone you know is experiencing addiction, visit cdc.gov/stopoverdose to learn more about the various treatment options available.
The Grant and Danny radio program is sponsored exclusively by the law firm Condori and Murad. They'll guide you and your family in the right direction. They'll help you to draft your will or set up a revocable trust, even create a healthcare power of attorney. Schedule a free consultation with their estate planning attorneys at kmlawyers.com. Be sure to tell them that G&D sent you. That way you'll get a discount. kmlawyers.com. As promised, caller 10 right now at 800-636-1067. Congratulations. You're winning two tickets to Jason Aldean. It's the Highway Desperado Tour 2024. Friday, August 30th, 10 days out, Jiffy Lube Live. Tickets on sale now. For tickets and more event information, please go to thefandc.com/events. It is time for our Beltway Blitz. The NFL's on deck. The Commanders are in the hole. We start things off on the diamond. Bobby Blanco, massinsports.com is where we begin. On the Nats, Bobby, James Wood hit a 420-foot monster home run in his most recent game on Sunday against the Phillies. For the year, he's hitting .284 with an .830 OPS. Man, has he been good in these first 42 games in a year where none of the top prospects getting called up have thrived right away.
Yeah, I think we talked about this before. I think the Nationals' patience with him is paying off. We were talking so much earlier in the season about how one, you know, everyone wanted to see him up here. He had deserved to be up here with what he was doing at Triple A Rogers. But two, like, the Nationals offense itself needed some help. They needed a boost. But I think we got to give Mike Rizzo and the Nats some credit for being patient. I know he had the hamstring injury in June that kind of delayed his debut until July. But, you know, they were patient with him. They waited until they believed he was fully ready to come up to the majors, play every day, and finish off the season here and be successful here. And I think that patience really paid off because we're seeing him really command the strike zone well. He's adjusting better in left field. But, yeah, that bolt he hit on Sunday in Philly. And that distance is way short of what it actually was.
Totally.
Because I was there. It hit the stadium and bounced back onto the field. So if the Phillies don't have a big scoreboard in right field, that thing keeps going. I mean, that was an absolute moonshot.
Bobby, how do we grade C.J. Abrams' season overall? On pace to be maybe a 2030 guy? I feel like his defense has improved, although there was an article recently that said it's maybe not quite as good as meets the eye. Just give me your thoughts on his year. Only 23 years old, but turning in some impressive counting stats.
It's been a bit of a roller coaster, up and down season for CJ this year. He was an all-star, of course. He started off the season really well. He was clearly their best player. It was such a contrast to how we started last year because he struggled out of the gate. He had a lot of defensive issues, but this year he started off great. And then he hit a lull in May. He had a really terrible May. Got kind of back in June, you know, was named to the all-star team. And then you know, July was a little bit kind of a mixed bag. He's been struggling as of late. He finally, you know, got a multi-hit game in Baltimore last week. He had a solid game on Sunday in Philly as the Nats escaped with a win. So it is tough to give him an overall grade. There's still a month plus left, so I'll hold off on giving him a final grade for this season. But it has been a mixed bag because he has been inconsistent. At times when he's good, he's their best player. But at times when he's bad, I mean, this team really struggles because they go as he goes. And David Martinez has said that a bunch. Like, he's kind of their offensive and defensive leader. So if he's struggling, the whole team kind of struggling. Maybe James Wood can kind of pick up some of that pace as well, because if those two guys get hot, I mean, this is actually a pretty solid team.
One guy that I think the Nats have to be very pleased with based on how he's performed this year is lefty DJ Hers, the 23-year-old. When he was called up, there were major questions about would he throw the ball over the plate? You know, is he going to be throwing balls to the backstop and bouncing balls? And is he going to have the command necessary and even just the reserve kind of on the mound? Is he ever, can he throw over and keep runners close? Like all these different things. He's got a low 4s ERA through 12 starts, almost 70 strikeouts in 55 innings. It's been a mixed bag to be sure, but a lot of good for a guy who's just 23 pitches tonight. What do you make of his season, and what are we looking out for tonight with DJ Hers?
I think he's a great feel-good story for, I think, this team's front office because, you know, he was a they made one trade at last year's deadline, and he was the headline of that Candelario deal. And then he comes up and makes his debut this year. They get him ready. I remember talking to him in spring training, and he was very motivated because, you know, he kind of felt a little slighted that he was traded. So he wanted to go out and prove the Cubs were wrong to kind of give up on him or to give him up. And the Nationals were right to bring him in. He really wants to be successful here. He's impressed. Of course, that outing against the Marlins sticks out, 13 strikeouts, 6 innings, shutout ball, only one hit. He had a little bit of a lull. If you remember, they sent him down right before the All-Star break to kind of give him a reset. And he's been pitching well the second half. And last week, I guess it was, that rainy day against the Giants, his start got kind of thrown off. He only pitched two and two-thirds innings, and, you know, the two rain delays kind of screwed up his start. But over his 4 starts, excluding that start, he's got an ERA under 3. So he's been pitching very well this second half. He has been able to throw the ball over the plate, like you mentioned. He has been able to get guys to whiff at his stuff. I mean, I look back at his start last weekend against Baltimore. That's a tough Orioles lineup, and he kept the Nats in the game. 6 strong innings right there against a really good lineup. So I think he's been very impressive this year. Hopefully he can finish the season strong and make a strong case to be a, you know, compete for a roster spot, a rotation spot next spring training.
Bobby, thank you as always, buddy. Talk soon.
Yeah, thanks, guys.
We'll see you, my friend. Hit that NFL sounder, please. PFF's Max Chadwick joins us to go around the National Football League. He's got a piece on Jaden Daniels we'll get to here in a moment. But Max, big picture, these rookies, quarterbacks at least, seem to have hit the ground running here in the preseason. Is this really that good of a class, or is it just kind of, you know, early snow?
I think it's a really good class, honestly. Thanks for having me on, guys. I think you've got a guy like Caleb Williams and Jaden Daniels and Bo Nix even looks really good out there as well. I mean, listen, we had 6 quarterbacks in the top 15, which is a new record. So I think it's pretty indicative of how good the class was. And I think you're seeing it so far. I mean, these guys are really good and ready to play immediately. I think Caleb Williams will be the opening day starter. Jaden Daniels will be the opening day starter. Maybe Bo Nix as well. I think you're going to see these guys play pretty early, honestly.
What should we, to Danny's point, though, like be confident in taking out of these preseason games? And what is more just kind of, well, of course, he's going to look good. There's not a whole lot happening other than, you know, catch and throw stuff.
Yeah, I think everything's pretty simple right now, offensively and defensively, so not really too much is being asked of these guys yet. But I think what you're seeing is some of the play style, right? I think Caleb Williams, the magical plays are translating to the NFL just as they were in college. I think that's a good sign. Bo Nix is just as efficient as he was in college as well, which is a good sign. Even J.J. McCarthy looks really good in his only preseason game he played. Unfortunately, he obviously suffered that season-ending injury, but he looked pretty good as well. So, yeah, I think it's just good to see some of the stuff that you see in college that you hope would translate to the NFL. Some of it is translating over already. So I think, again, not much to glean off of. They're not playing the entire game. But it is good enough to see that, hey, some of this stuff will at least work in the NFL.
Who is your team that you're higher on than it seems like everybody else is?
Oh, good question. I'm actually going to go with the Chicago Bears. I think the Bears are maybe going to be a playoff team this year. I think Caleb Williams will make that kind of impact on this team day one. And, I mean, I could see him having like a C.J. Stroud type of year with all the supporting cast he has. And, you know, Stroud took the Texans from one of the worst teams in the league all the way to the divisional round of the playoffs. I think that Caleb Williams could have a similar type of impact on the Bears this year too. So I think the Bears are a team that I think could be pushing for a wild card spot in the NFC playoffs this year.
I know you were working on some Jaden Daniels content recently. Obviously, we can't get enough discussion on Daniels here in D.C. right now. What did you find?
I mean, I just think Jaden Daniels is a really good quarterback. I was lucky enough to interview him last year before his Heisman Trophy season. He's a great kid. I'm really excited to see what he could do day one for the Commanders as a starting quarterback. And He's a really elite rushing threat. I think that'll immediately be evident. I think he'll be a guy that'll be day one, one of the top rushing quarterbacks in the NFL. The question is just how is the passing going to translate? Because I think LSU made it a little bit easy on him last year with all the weapons they had and how simple the concepts were. But he's shown immediately that he can be a capable passer in the NFL. So the rushing should be great immediately. And I think as a passer with Cliff Kingsbury, we'll see how it progresses. But I'm excited to see what he could do day one for the Commanders.
How does that NFC East go? Last year, Dallas 12-5, Philly 11-6 with that collapse. The Giants 6-11. Two of those wins against Washington. Feels like they always handle the local 53. And then, of course, Washington in the rear view at 4-13. Does that division, does that order shuffle up at all to you, Max?
I think it might. I think, you know, you look at the division right now and how it's shaken out. And, you know, I mean, yeah, I think you have a different division champion in the last, like, what, 20 years, basically?
Decades, yeah.
It's kind of crazy. Like, it's crazy how it's shifted. So I think it's possible. I think the Eagles would be my pick to win the division right now. So it would change a little bit. And I think Dallas is right there as a potential playoff team too. And then I still think the Giants and Commanders are pretty a ways away from competing in that division. So I think they're still probably going to be having maybe top 10 picks in the NFL draft. So I think it's still pretty much what we're going to see from last year is the same thing this year.
PFF's Max Chadwick covers the NFL and college football. Before we let you go on the college game for a moment, Heisman Trophy candidates for this football season, I'd imagine, just top of my head, Carson Beck at Georgia, Quinn Ewers at Texas, maybe Shador Sanders, Colorado, although he's probably not going to have the good enough record to win it. Like, those guys are in the convo. Am I wrong? Who am I missing?
I think you're right. I think those are some of the guys in the convo. The one I'm actually picking to win the trophy this year is Dylan Gabriel, the quarterback at Oregon. I think they have the best offense in college football. Bo Nix was actually a Pac-12 championship away from winning the Heisman Trophy. He was a betting favorite heading into conference championship weekend, and then after losing to Washington, Jaden Daniels took over and ultimately won the trophy. I think Dylan Gabriel could have a similar type of impact this year and put up huge numbers. It's kind of like that Bo Nix mold for that Oregon offense. I think Jackson Dart, the Ole Miss quarterback, is certainly a top candidate as well. But yeah, I would say Dylan Gabriel and Carson Beck, those are my two kind of clear front runners for the trophy as of right now.
Do you have Oregon then as a national championship contender? Like, where? What's your seating at the top of the board for rankings?
Yeah, I think Oregon, I think there's a pretty clear top three teams in college football. I think Oregon is one of them. I think you put Georgia and Ohio State as the other two teams in the top three right now. And like I said, Oregon has probably the best offense in the country and a really good defense too. I mean, those three teams of Georgia, Ohio State, and Oregon are pretty complete all around. Honestly, there's not a lot of weaknesses in any of those teams. So, yeah, I think those are the top three right now, and I think Oregon absolutely can be a national title contender.
And then last one on Colorado and Deion Sanders. What is the expectation for them? And if, like, what has to happen for him to either be viewed this year as having had a great year or the flip side, like, be on the hot seat?
Yeah, I think honestly, hot seat is nuts to even be talking about for him. I mean, people got to remember how bad this Colorado program was before he got hired. They had a 1-11 record in 2022. So yeah, 4-8 doesn't match the hype that they got, but also, like, that's a 3-win improvement of what they had the year before. And also, listen, we're talking about Colorado on the air right now. We weren't doing that 2 years ago, right? So I think Colorado would be foolish to ever think about firing Deion Sanders, at least right now. I mean, he truly has that program in the discussion, which is something that they haven't had in a long time, right? So I don't think he's not going to be on the hot seat for any time soon. So honestly, whether he wants to keep coaching after his son leaves, or both of his sons leave, is the question. But I think a successful year this year, improve on that 4-8 record. They certainly have the talent to do it. They did a great job in the portal of addressing their needs on the offensive and defensive lines. I think a 6-6 record, make a bowl game, maybe even be better than that. 6-6 is the expectation. I think anything more than that should be seen as a success for Colorado.
Max, thank you, buddy. Have a great week.
Thanks, guys.
See you, my friend. Hit that local 53 sounder, Darius. By God, in person, that's Chris Russell. Fresh off his podcast on the Deuce, here in studio with your pals. Rooster, I actually found myself agreeing with you.
Oh, no.
No, it was good. You were making one of these good points, and I was nodding in my car, and I was like, what does that say about me?
One of the rare good points.
No, you've made ones of good points, yeah, over the years. Here's one, though. Are you surprised at what this Washington football team showed in the preseason?
Yes.
In terms of some of the looks, formations, go into that.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, obviously, the stuff we can all see. Up-tempo by design, I thought they were going to save that. It's not, you know, reinventing the wheel, but I thought they were going to save that, dictating when we did that, how much we did that, taking Todd Bowles a little bit by surprise in the season opener. Okay. So the no huddle stuff, tempo by design. I think some of the formations that they've used, I'm blown away that Cliff Kingsbury tipped his hand on that. I mean, I have seen formations go back to the De'Ami Brown audible check, five receiver set or spread. Okay, not anything, again, reinventing the wheel. Surprise, we saw that. The other day, they came out in a modified wishbone, two tight end half H-backs lined up left and right, Jaden in the middle of that, and Brian Robinson behind that. They ran that a couple of times.
Greg Roman era right
there.
Yeah.
And they ran it once, and they passed it once out of that formation. They ran a 2x2 against the Jets. They ran a 3-bunch receiver cluster, like a triangle cluster to the right with one side, with one receiver on the other side, the other night with Driscoll in his first series. Again,
what did you think they'd do, though? Just line up?
I thought they would go as vanilla could be, like vanilla ice cream on a hot summer Sunday. I
mean, the only thing I'd say is they haven't really run anything conceptually crazy after the snap.
Like I agree with you.
They've shown read option to that.
And that's the other thing that
like
I didn't
keeper,
get you.
Yeah. Like mm-hmm. that was
three of them
pulling Sinnott. Yep. Ben Sinnott the way that
yep.
they did.
Yep.
And I'm surprised they've shown no huddle and the tempo. So I get some of what you're saying for sure.
I thought they would be two receivers or every team runs 75% 11 personnel, three receivers. So I thought we'd see that. And I thought we'd see Terry here and whoever, De'Ami here, and then a bunch of goobers on the offensive line here.
I think you just got to figure out what Jaden likes, what he can do, what he can't do.
That's fair.
Also, who were we talking to the other day that said, if you show some things, teams now have to prepare for it? Like Andy Reid and Patrick Mahomes.
I was positing. I was like, maybe that's why?
Andy Reid and Patrick Mahomes went to their behind-the-back play so that now you got to know that they got that in the playbook.
That's fair.
Who's going to be the second highest targeted receiver on this team outside of McLaurin?
Ooh.
Wideouts.
Oh, just wideouts.
Yeah. Number two in targets this year.
I don't know. I'm feeling my oats a little bit too much on this one. I'm going to say Alameda Zaccheaus. I think he can work. I know he can work outside. I know he can work inside. So he's got the versatility. I think he's more physical than Jahan Dotson. I mean, Jahan Dotson the other night, guys, I don't know if you saw this, but he was engaged in a block on an Alameda Zaccheaus little slip screen to the left side. He's fully engaged, 5 yards ahead. He's doing everything right. He loses his block, and the guy gets around him, and Zaccheaus gets blown up for a 2-yard gain. Please, I know you're not 6'4". I got it. I know you're not 225. Got it. Please be more physical. That's all they're asking for. A little more hustle, a little more effort, a little more of this. I think Alameda Zaccheaus, because he can play inside and outside, because he's a veteran receiver, even though he's a little smurfish for me, I think he'll be probably... I got to see it with De'Ami. I'm sorry. I just got to see it with De'Ami.
What position are you most worried about?
Oh, a total? Overall? I'm going to go... I mean, the easy answer would be corners. I'm going to go pass rush. Even though I think they've got a lot of guys, I don't know if they have great guys. And until I see Johnny Newton actually be able to stay on the field, I'm going to consider him Fedarian Mathis, and I'm going to consider him a non-factor. And I don't know if Jonathan Allen and Daron Payne are just going to automatically, because they have different coaching, wake up and, I don't know, play like it was 2 years ago.
How much are they going to get out of Zach Ertz? Like this version of Zach Ertz.
If he's standing, they'll get, you know, if somehow he plays, I don't know, what do you say, 15 out of 17 games?
Sure.
Let's just call it 15 out of 17 games. I think they get 60 catches out of him. Maybe 5 touchdowns?
60 is a boatload.
That'd have been third on the team last year. Yeah.
If he plays 15 games, that's what, 4 per game? I think that's reasonable.
I mean, just 15 games is a boatload for him.
No, and I do think, I mean, CK and I were just having this conversation out there. I think John Bates, he told me a week and a half ago, I think the day you and I were out there, that he feels not only great, but he like worked on his passing game or whatever. We've seen little glimpses of that.
Oh my God.
I'm just saying, I think
Don't believe me. You don't have to do this.
I think John Bates can be a bigger contributor in the passing game than he has been, period.
Just so you know, whatever that is that you just did, that's your thing. I don't know what that means necessarily to you.
Yeah, what... You're right.
You know what I'm saying?
I know exactly what you're saying.
Hey, man.
That's not dying on a hill.
It's not a hill die. You do that too.
But John Bates going to be an X factor in the past. He's going to catch a ball and fall over shortly thereafter.
They're going to play 12 personnel all the time.
I agree.
Not all the time, but a lot of the time. He's going to be on the field all the time. He's their best blocker.
What's your only blocker? What's your point? He's going to catch some passes?
Yeah.
He's going to catch more or less than last year.
30 passes.
30? What bet do we want to make on that?
How about a dinner at Philomena?
I love it.
Silly.
Great Italian restaurant.
I mean, you guys tooted your horn about Philomena and sent all the pictures that made me just die with hunger.
Well, when you do live radio, you can finish top five and get some bonuses, and you can go out to dinner.
When I'm back in the major leagues?
Yeah.
30 and a half catches, yeah. Rainey. That's going to be the over on
it. All right, I'm going to take the over.
You go over.
30 and hook.
I'll go under.
All right.
Captain John Bates. You are precious. Thank you, sir.
I mean, would you like me to bring back Jim Haslett?
We know you.
He's available.
Him and Chase would both be on your staff. We know that. Ladies and gentlemen, Chris Russell on your Beltway Blitz. We're Grant and Danny. You're listening to The Fan. 5 o'clock, the audio vault is loaded today. We got a ton of great audio clips. Been scouring the web for a few days to give you a good audio vault. That's coming up in about 40 minutes. Next, ESPN went best case, worst case for every single team. What about the Commanders' best and worst case? This is Grant and Danny.
In life and recovery, every day is a little different. Embrace the good days, the not so good days, and the challenges, and acknowledge how you overcame them. Find the path to recovery that works for you. Learn more at cdc.gov/stopoverdose.
What's better than watching your team win? Winning money while you do it. I'm Jim Costa, and on Cash the Ticket, Mike Valeni and I give you the edge to make every game playable. College football, NFL, we're breaking it all down game by game. Your podcast feed is going to be filled, and you're going to love it. You can click on the games you care about. We do it all. With our analysis, we're finding games that other people aren't talking about. We're turning every Saturday and every Sunday into days where you got a chance to win. Don't just sit on the sidelines. Cash the Ticket with us. Follow Cash the Ticket in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Nationals are back home. We will get you a preview of Nats baseball before we get out of here in the 6 o'clock segment. We're done at 6:15. Tonight, we'll get you a weather report and starting lineups, all coming up on Grant and Danny. But we've been talking about Commanders training camp, which resumes with a practice tomorrow at 1 o'clock out at the facility. All of our camp coverage and Commanders talk this week presented by Paul Henry's Window Installation. PaulHenrysWindows.com, your clear home improvement choice. Danny, you had your attention on an ESPN piece on the best and worst case for every single NFL team and what it might mean for Washington.
Yeah, interesting exercise, right? I like stuff like this an awful lot where, for example, last year for Washington, that was the worst case, right? Everything went poorly that possibly could have gone poorly. There were winnable games that, of course, they didn't win. They beat the Broncos by two, but, you know, you lose to the Jets by two, close game, missed field goal here and there. You could have had a couple more wins very easily. I'm not saying they were a good team, but the bottom really does have to fall out for you to pick second overall in the draft. Conversely, you look at a couple years ago, like Philadelphia, when they went on that unbelievable run. They were great, but they weren't, you know, 14-2 great, 14-3 great. They probably should have been 12-5, 11-6. So this kind of goes into that, right? Looking at the ranges for each team. The usual suspects that you'd anticipate, if everything breaks right, health, MVP caliber season from your quarterback, etc. Teams like the Bills, the Ravens, Cincinnati, Kansas City, San Francisco are in that 13-14 win plateau. Their worst case scenarios, you know, guys get hurt, bottom kind of falls out. Their floor is only a 7-10 type thing. Then there are the middling teams where maybe if it's true, we might win 9 games, but our floor is disaster, right? Like what happened to Washington last year. So just going to Washington specifically, what would you guess their best case scenario is? Because these are pretty in line with, I think, how we view a lot of these teams.
Best case scenario, I would think the national perspective is 9 wins. I would say 10 wins. But best case scenario is Jaden Daniels plays an outstanding rookie year, wins offensive rookie of the year and makes everyone around him better. And they're an above 500 team that's competitive in December for the playoffs. I could see them winning 10. I'm old enough to remember, you know, Robert Griffin in 2012 in a division championship and the Week 17 play-in game against the Dallas Cowboys. So that would be my answer, is a 10-win season. But I'll bet the expectation nationally is a little lower than that.
Hit it on the head. 9-8. Worst-case scenario was 4-13. So,
and I would say the worst-case scenario is like 5-11. Or I guess now it would be 5-12.
Right. Maybe a win and or loss better
in each
case.
Yeah, I'm a game,
you're a game better each time.
In each regard. I think their ceiling's a little higher and their floor's a little higher.
But so some of their contemporaries that are in there, the Minnesota kind of fits that same bill.
Did they do this before or after the J.J. McCarthy injury?
Great question. I think it's probably before. Because it was before this weekend, and that's when the announcement happened that he's going to be out for a long time.
He got hurt a week ago in the week. It's been over a week since he got
But the how serious it was had to happen. I guess maybe it was
Monday
published
or
before.
Tuesday last week.
Yeah, maybe before the surgery. I don't know, either way. But that's theirs. Looking at some of the other teams that might fit, the Giants had the exact same profile, 9-8 versus 4-13. Good
see,
and bad.
I don't see nearly as high a ceiling for the Giants because you can't really convince me, while I don't think Daniel Jones is as horrendous as maybe the perception online might be. We've seen him play at a high level already once. It got them a playoff win. It got them, you know, the road victory in Minnesota when they lit up a bad defense and got a coordinator fired, and then they got worked the following week. But, like, what is the best-case scenario for Jones at this point with a really good receiver in Neighbors? That he's just middle of the pack. He can't be a transcendent talent, I don't think. You know, Jaden Daniels could be a wave of wand over a team and have the kind of year as a rusher and a passer where all of a sudden you win the division because he's that good. He's the best athlete on the field. Daniel Jones doesn't have that club in the back. I mean, so don't you agree that the upside for Washington, if everything goes your way, is higher than it would be for the Giants?
It's a great question. I mean, the Giants defense is really good, and I don't think Washington is. So you saw the Giants in a few games last year. Again, I'm not telling you they're a good team. I think they're going to stink. I think they're going to be right back where they were this past year. But, you know, you lose a game by a point. You lose a field goal game. They lost that Jets-Giants rivalry game, which is one of the worst games in league history. Quite frankly, it was ugly and hideous, and backup quarterbacks abound, and offense was at a premium. But to me, it's a Jones has, you know, a play every other week because he's got Malik Neighbors. They're winning some grinded-out games on defense. Brian Burns forces a turnover here and there. Probably a little lower ceiling than Washington to me, but not by a ton.
Is the Giants' defense supposed to be really good? They have a great defensive line. I think they'll rush the quarterback, so you're obviously going to be pretty solid. But their secondary is nothing but questions.
Yeah,
they lost their terrific safety from a year ago, and now it's a bunch of guys either I haven't heard of or they're very, very young draft picks. They're just drafted a nickelback in Drew Phillips in, I think, the third round, well after Sanristil, who's going to start right away. They drafted a safety in the second round that's probably going to start on that team this year. I love Dexter Lawrence up front, Brian Burns on the edge, having the ability to have Kayvon Thibodeau come off the other edge potentially or moving him around. I think they're going to have him standing up, playing a little more linebacker, like edge rushing in that way. They got some players, but I don't know. I'm just, what is the strength of that team, I guess, as we think about it? I'm trying to even make the case for them getting to 10 wins.
It's a defensive front. I mean, it's Lawrence, it's Burns, it's Thibodeau.
Sure, I'm saying other than that, what do they hang their hat on? I think they've got a couple of really good players at one position group.
Yeah.
It's kind of like Washington the last few years.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if Jaden Daniels isn't unbelievable, then there's obviously no hope for Washington to be over 500 either. But my point is, we know that Daniel Jones does not have the ceiling of transcending that organization this year. We don't know that about Jaden Daniels. If Daniels has the Griffin 12 year or the, you know, the Dak Prescott rookie season, or he's CJ Stroud from last year, see the Texans. They won 10 games in a division that wasn't great. That's the other thing about the East. The Cowboys are probably coming back to the pack, right?
To some degree,
they
had
a terrible offseason. Their running back room is bad. Ezekiel Elliott in 2024 is their starting running back. He hasn't been good in 3 years. The Eagles, I think, will win the division, but last season they had to fire both coordinators.
Yeah, they fell apart.
They're entering the year with their head coach already on the hot seat. Supposedly, the head coach and the quarterback have friction and don't get along great. And oh, by the way, the quarterback, who was unbelievable 2 seasons ago, was mediocre at best last year. So I don't think it's crazy to say the NFC East might not be that good.
No, I don't think it is. I don't think it's near one of the – I think it's a middle-of-the-pack division with a few, you know – you may be the best of this group, but how much of a threat are you really? I mean, I think Philadelphia is going to surprise some people, but
it's not AFC South a year ago bad, but I guess my point is, if Jaden Daniels could be CJ Stroud somehow, you could get in a winning in week 18 game where you go 10-7, a la the Griffin 2012 Washington team or like the Texans last year, don't you think? Like if a couple things go wrong with Philly, you couldn't see a final week game where you get in, you're tied, and you have a tiebreaker over the Eagles at 10 wins?
For the division?
I can see that.
Mm, yeah, I think that's a bit more than I'm willing to do. Just, again, the NFC is nowhere near as deep as the AFC. And that's
again,
obvious, right?
I'm not saying it's realistic. I'm saying this is the best case scenario, correct?
Right. So my ceiling's a little bit lower than that. My ceiling would be one of the two teams, it's Philly or Dallas, wins the division. you're sniffing around in the hunt for a wild card, but I just think there are too many bodies to climb over, right? There's too much, you know, Green Bay, Chicago on the rise. Detroit is now pretty much a staple. Go to San Francisco. The Rams were 10-7 last year, and if Matt Stafford's healthy, they're a threat. Seattle's always 8-9 or 9-8. Not like they're any good, but again, who are we talking about, right? So for me, I had the ceiling a little bit lower. I mean, the example I always point to, C.J. Stroud is the case, right? Lightning in the bottle. Texas goes from moribund, disastrous, to playoff team. My counter is always Justin Herbert. Had the best rookie season anyone's ever had for a 7-win team. I think that's kind of the ceiling to me. Not 7 wins, but that under-talented, bad in some spots. We didn't even try to fix all the things. We acknowledged we couldn't, so we didn't even try. Group that is going to muddle along and win a couple games here and there on fight and grit, but it's like that Gibbs return year one to me.
Totally, but Herbert's excellence and that team being bad kind of were part and parcel, I think, like hand in hand. His excellence was he threw for 4,000 yards and 30 touchdowns or whatever the numbers were.
Mm-hmm.
And it's partially like Deshaun Watson did a couple of years before.
Because they're
that,
trailing a lot.
When everyone went nuts, because it was a 4-13 team that was terrible and they're throwing and they're behind incessantly. So yeah, you put up big numbers. And I'm not saying it's easy to do that. No rookie had been able to. And there have been a lot of bad teams. But when you throw it as much as Lombardi did that year and that offense did, I think that that is doable. Whereas a Daniels, like if Daniels is great, it's not standing in the pocket throwing when you're behind. If Daniels is great, it means he's running all over the place. He's making plays with his arm as well. And maybe the team's better. And yes, there aren't a lot of guys like C.J. Stroud last year. But I'm open to the possibility that the game is now resembling college more than it ever has before. Like the difference between running an offense on a Saturday and running an offense on a Sunday, would you agree, is the closest that it's ever been in terms of personnel groupings, formations, what's asked of you. Like, again, before 2012 in Kyle Shanahan's offense, we hadn't seen the pistol and read option in the NFL, really, that Chris Ault offense. No chance. No one did that. And now it's just kind of ubiquitous if you've got a dual threat type quarterback. So maybe, yes, Stroud was unprecedented last year, but maybe we'll see more of that. Maybe it's easier to have that type of season where it was an impossibility 5 or 10 years ago. But I want to know your records, best case, worst case next. And then I want to open up the phones for people on this as well. 800-636-1067 on the MGM National Harbor listener lines. 800-636-1067. Also, we can read a little more from what they had to say about the Commanders. But the question is, what's the best case scenario in terms of wins? What's the worst case scenario in terms of wins? What does that look like for you this year for the Commanders? We're Grant and Danny. Best and worst case for the Commanders in light of ESPN answering that question for every team this week. Welcome back, Grant and Danny on the Fan. So I have the best case, and it's unlikely, and I'm not predicting this in any way. 10 wins because Jaden Daniels was incredible. He wins the Offensive Rookie of the Year. He's an unstoppable weapon, and the entire organization changes overnight. Not expected, but could happen. When you draft a guy two, just had the greatest season in the history of the SEC at quarterback, maybe. Worst case scenario, I think the floor has been elevated by a lot of the 1- and 2-year deals they signed veterans to. I think the amount of improvement on this coaching staff, just better coaching is going to be worth a win or two. Having an upgrade at the most important position, assuming you can keep him healthy, is worth a win or two. And I am assuming Jaden Daniels is healthier because I'm not even going to go down the road of if Marcus Mariota and Jeff Driscoll are starting games for this team. Trace McSorley's got a week 15 start or something. I'm not playing that game. So I'll just say 5 wins. And I think the truth is probably closer to the 5 than the 10. They're probably a 6-7 win team. I'll say 7. But 5 to 10 is my range of bad to good here.
So my ceiling's just a hair lower, 9-8. I pretty much actually have exactly what ESPN does in this. And the floor, they have 4-13. I think that's too low. I just don't see everything going wrong again. What you had last year was the perfect storm of badness. Terrible personnel decisions and management over the course of multiple years. A quarterback decision that blew up in their face. Commitments to players that weren't any good. Every possible bad coaching decision, everything that you could do wrong, they did wrong. And they still had a chance to win 6 or 7 ball games, right? I mean, again, it took everything possible for the bottom to fall out for that 4-13 team, getting everybody fired, and now we have everything brand new. So to me, their floor is probably a 5-12 situation. That's, again, if everything is terrible, everything goes wrong, that's if Daniels is hurt, that's if a couple of the new players on defense don't pan out, or you're missing John Allen for 6 weeks. crap like that. I still don't see the bottom falling out for a 4-13 team. I just don't think they can be that bad again.
I just don't think there's a path to Jaden Daniels being awesome and them being a 4 or 5 win team. First and foremost, quarterback's just too important and has too much influence on the operation, largely. Especially when we're talking about a dual quarterback. Like, it's one thing to stand in the pocket and put up numbers as a passer, and you could do that sometimes when you're in front, when you're, you know, tied, when you're behind. You mentioned Herbert's rookie year. Like, there are plenty of quarterbacks, if you look year in and year out at the leading passers in the league, who might have a lot of numbers, but they weren't on good teams, necessarily. I think in Jaden Daniels' case, this is not a pocket passer who's just going to stand there and pick defenses apart coming from behind. Like, an awesome season. For him to win Offensive Rookie of the Year, he's rushing for 700 yards. You know what I mean? Like, he's having a epic year as not just a passer, but as a rusher. And I think that explosiveness is one of the more efficient ways to move the football. It's one of the more effective ways to have a really good offense. And you and I harp on this show quite a bit. If you have a really good offense, you're not a bad football team. You have a really good offense, you don't go 5-12. Now, you're not going 4-13. Doesn't happen. So if he's running as much as I think he is early in the season, I think he's going to make plays. And the question is, can he protect the football? And to his credit at LSU last year and throughout training camp and in the preseason, he has never really put the ball in harm's way. Like, that's the thing that's maybe been most impressive that we haven't talked a lot about. The ball is almost never near defenders. Now, in the two preseason games, aside from the one deep shot where Diami was open down the sideline anyway, he hasn't really thrown a ball with a degree of difficulty enough to even think about throwing a pick. I haven't looked at his expected completion percentage, but I'd imagine he's been 12 of 15 in the preseason. The only of the throws where the completion percentage would have been expected lower than it was maybe that deep shot to Brown. But he's completed 80% of his passes. I'd imagine the expected number is right around there. Like, in my point is, you know, it's not a degree of difficulty yet. But if you're not turning the football over at quarterback and you're making plays with your arm and your feet, you're going to have an okay offense. And I think there's going to be a lot of that in the early going. There'll be adjustments. And that's my big question is, when teams adjust, what happens with Washington? That's the 2012 thing.
Right.
But I think we're a long ways away from that.
Yeah, the thing I worry about is on that front, and again, I've harped on this a million times over. I'm sure everyone's sick of it. But I think their design is, we're going to run it a ton. Daniels will run it some, a bit more than you think. We're going to feature the run. We're going to try to, you know, control the clock down in distance, even if we're playing tempo, et cetera. I just don't think that's enough to actually have a good offense. See what I'm saying? Like, I think that it'll look more like Scott Turner's calling the plays after Ron Rivera went and talked to him than it will what we all want, which is a diverse, we have no idea what's coming, versatile, holy crap, this is so much fun. No one has any idea where the ball's going every play because there's two ball fakes and then the drift play or this, that, and the other.
I mean, the Ravens have a really good offense every year.
They do. That's a great organization. This is.
Yeah, but I'm saying doing it that way. It just depends how good he is at it, right? I mean, Baltimore, how long have we talked about involving their wide receivers?
Yeah, well, they've tried at wide receiver for 10 years. They can't get it right. They draft a guy high every other year. Washington has been content to do whatever this is.
But my point is, with the running the football and the misdirection and all these things, they were the number 4 offense in the league last year. You know, they were the number 11 offense, or 12, it looks like, maybe, in yards per play in 2022. You know, in the Greg Roman days, when everyone killed them because they didn't make enough plays, they were never below a middle of the pack, you know, good NFL offense.
Sure, I mean, they're the best at that. They've been that under Harbaugh the whole time, regardless of OC.
I'm just saying there's a path to being a good offense that way. That's all I'm saying.
Okay, I think that's fair. I think it's hard to shoot the moon that way. It takes extra special.
I think he's a better passer than Lamar coming out. You know, I don't think...
At this stage, yeah.
Like, to me, that's the cheat code is the stuff where he just, oh my God, he just ran for 59 and scored a touchdown. Mm-hmm. There's going to be a few of those this year. Or he just took someone's soul and he went for 57 and it's first and goal from the 8 or whatever. He got angled out of bounds. But if you're also making the plays through the air, then you have a path to, you know, potentially really, really good offense.
Yeah, and to me, the path through the air part is the part that's too much of a variable. And not because of Daniels. Like, you know what I mean? I don't know. Like, if you play against a team with a good cornerback or a defensive coordinator that knows the Terry McLaurin is going to be on the left-hand side, do you have answers? And I think that's the hard part.
I will promise you this is one of the most loaded audio vaults we've ever had.
Let's go.
Coming your way next, great audio from Tom Brady, Tua Tagovailoa, Peyton Manning makes a cameo, Travis Kelce, Jim Irsay. We got it all on Grant and Danny. Best and worst case for the Commanders in light of ESPN answering that question for every team this week. Welcome back, Grant and Danny on the Fan. So I have the best case, and it's unlikely, and I'm not predicting this in any way. 10 wins because Jaden Daniels was incredible. He wins the Offensive Rookie of the Year. He's an unstoppable weapon, and the entire organization changes overnight. Not expected, but could happen when you draft a guy who just had the greatest season in the history of the SEC at quarterback, maybe. Worst case scenario, I think the floor has been elevated by a lot of the 1 and 2 year deals they signed veterans to. I think the amount of improvement on this coaching staff, just better coaching is going to be worth a win or two. Having an upgrade at the most important position, assuming you can keep him healthy, is worth a win or two. And I am assuming Jaden Daniels is healthier because I'm not even going to go down the road of if Marcus Mariota and Jeff Driscoll are starting games for this team. Trace McSorley's got a week 15 start or something. I'm not playing that game. So I'll just say 5 wins. And I think the truth is probably closer to the 5 than the 10. They're probably a 6-7 win team. I'll say 7. But 5 to 10 is my range of bad to good here.
So my ceiling's just a hair lower, 9-8. I pretty much actually have exactly what ESPN does in this. And the floor, they have 4-13. I think that's too low. I just don't see everything going wrong again. What you had last year was the perfect storm of badness. Terrible personnel decisions and management over the course of multiple years. A quarterback decision that blew up in their face. Commitments to players that weren't any good. Every possible bad coaching decision, everything that you could do wrong, they did wrong. And they still had a chance to win 6 or 7 ball games, right? I mean, again, it took everything possible for the bottom to fall out for that 4-13 team, getting everybody fired, and now we have everything brand new. So to me, their floor is probably a 5-12 situation. That's, again, if everything is terrible, everything goes wrong, that's if Daniels is hurt, that's if a couple of the new players on defense don't pan out, or you're missing John Allen for 6 weeks, crap like that. I still don't see the bottom falling out for a 4-13 team. I just don't think they can be that bad again.
I just don't think there's a path to Jaden Daniels being awesome and them being a 4 or 5 win team. First and foremost, quarterback's just too important and has too much influence on the operation largely, especially when we're talking about a dual quarterback. Like, it's one thing to stand in the pocket and put up numbers as a passer, and you could do that sometimes when you're in front, when you're, tied, when you're behind. You mentioned Herbert's rookie year. Like, there are plenty of quarterbacks, if you look year in and year out at the leading passers in the league, who might have a lot of numbers, but they weren't on good teams necessarily. I think in Jaden Daniels' case, this is not a pocket passer who's just going to stand there and pick defenses apart coming from behind. Like, an awesome season. For him to win Offensive Rookie of the Year, he's rushing for 700 yards. You know what I mean? Like, he's having a epic year as not just a passer, but as a rusher. And I think that explosiveness is one of the more efficient ways to move the football. It's one of the more effective ways to have a really good offense. And you and I harp on this show quite a bit. If you have a really good offense, you're not a bad football team. You have a really good offense, you don't go 5-12. Now, you're not going 4-13. Doesn't happen. So if he's running as much as I think he is early in the season, I think he's going to make plays. And the question is, can he protect the football? And to his credit at LSU last year and throughout training camp and in the preseason, he has never really put the ball in harm's way. Like, that's the thing that's maybe been most impressive that we haven't talked a lot about. The ball is almost never near defenders. Now, in the 2 preseason games, aside from the 1 deep shot where Diami was open down the sideline anyway, he hasn't really thrown a ball with a degree of difficulty enough to even think about throwing a pick. I haven't looked at his expected completion percentage, but I'd imagine he's been 12 of 15 in the preseason. The only of the throws where the completion percentage would have been expected lower than it was maybe that deep shot to Brown. But he's completed 80% of his passes. I'd imagine the expected number is right around there. Like, in my point is, it's not a degree of difficulty yet. But if you're not turning the football over at quarterback and you're making plays with your arm and your feet, you're going to have an okay offense. And I think there's going to be a lot of that in the early going. There'll be adjustments. And that's my big question is when teams adjust, what happens with Washington? That's the 2012 thing.
Right.
But I think we're a long ways away from that.
Yeah, the thing I worry about is on that front, and again, I've harped on this a million times over. I'm sure everyone's sick of it. But I think their design is we're going to run it a ton. Daniels will run it some, a bit more than you think. We're going to feature the run. We're going to try to control the clock down in distance, even if we're playing tempo, etc. I just don't think that's enough to actually have a good offense. See what I'm saying? Like I think that it'll look more like Scott Turner's calling the plays after Ron Rivera went and talked to him than it will what we all want, which is a diverse, we have no idea what's coming, versatile, holy crap, this is so much fun. No one has any idea where the ball's going every play because there's two ball fakes and then the drift play or this, that, and the other.
I mean, the Ravens have a really good offense every year.
They do. That's a great organization. This is...
Yeah, but I'm saying doing it that way. It just depends how good he is at it, right? I mean, Baltimore, how long have we talked about involving their wide receivers?
Yeah, well, they've tried at wide receiver for 10 years. They can't get it right. They draft a guy high every other year. Washington has been content to do whatever this is.
But my point is with the running the football and the misdirection and all these things, they were the number 4 offense in the league last year. You know, they were the number 11 offense or 12, it looks like maybe in yards per play in 2022. You know, in the Greg Roman days when everyone killed them because they didn't make enough plays, they were never below a middle of the pack. You know, good NFL offense.
Sure, I mean, they're the best at that. They've been that under Harbaugh the whole time, regardless of OC.
I'm just saying there's a path to being a good offense that way. That's all I'm saying.
Okay, I think that's fair. I think it's hard to shoot the moon that way. It takes something extra special.
I think he's a better passer than Lamar coming out. You know, I don't
think... At this stage, yeah.
Like, to me, that's the cheat code is the stuff where he just, oh my God, he just ran for 59 and scored a touchdown. Mm-hmm. There's going to be a few of those this year. Or he just took someone's soul and he went for 57 and it's first and goal from the 8 or whatever. He got angled out of bounds. But if you're also making the plays through the air, then you have a path to, you know, potentially really, really good offense.
Yeah, and to me, the path through the air part is the part that's too much of a variable. And not because of Daniels. Like, you know what I mean? I don't know. Like, if you play against a team with a good cornerback or a defensive coordinator that knows the Terry McLaurin is going to be on the left-hand side, do you have answers? And I think that's the hard part.
I will promise you this is one of the most loaded audio vaults we've ever had.
Let's go.
Coming your way next. Great audio from Tom Brady, Tua Tagovailoa, Peyton Manning makes a cameo, Travis Kelce, Jim Irsay. We got it all on Grant and Danny.
In life, some days are good and some could be better. The same is true for recovery. Both take work. Both take adjustments. Finding your path is a key part of your journey. And then it's all about walking it every day. Embrace the good days, the not so good days, and the challenges, and acknowledge how you overcame them. Be open to every part of the journey and welcome it. It's unique and it's all part of you. Find the path to recovery that works for you. Learn more at cdc.gov/stopoverdose.
What's better than watching your team win? Winning money while you do it. I'm Jim Costa, and on Cash the Ticket, Mike Valeni and I give you the edge to make every game playable. College football, NFL, we're breaking it all down game by game. Your podcast feed is going to be filled, and you're going to love it. You can click on the games you care about. We do it all. With our analysis, we're finding games that other people aren't talking about. We're turning every Saturday and every Sunday into days where you got a chance to win. Don't just sit on the sidelines. Cash the Ticket with us. Follow Cash the Ticket in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Trying to figure out what to eat for dinner yet again? With Knorr sides and bouillon as your not-so-secret ingredient, you can skip the drive-thru and do dinner at home. Knorr Taste Combos provide a menu of delicious, affordable, and well-balanced meals that you can prepare in 30 minutes or less. Visit Knorr.com to get quick and easy recipe ideas for your home-cooked weeknight dinners. It's not fast food, but it's so good.